there's a verse which somehow or other, every time I try to learn it over the years, I forget it. So I'm going to try and remember it now. But you know, it happened to be so that every time I forgot this verse. So then one time, me, the big Swami, you know, comes to Bombay, and there's a taxi that picks me up, and the taxi driver quotes that verse, you know. So after that, you know, now I really have to learn it. So now I'm going to show off to you. And the verse is Nam Nam Hiyavati Shakti, got the first line. Papanir Harani Hare, second line. Tavat Kartum Ashaknoti, got the third line. Patakam Patakinara, yeah. By your mercy. So, this verse is very nice. Because it says that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra once, you destroy more sins than you can commit in a whole lifetime. Now just think about it, you know? Let it sink in for a moment. By one mantra, we can destroy more sins than you commit in a whole lifetime. So just, I don't know about your lifetime, I know about mine, I can start counting. Anyway, the program may not end if I keep on counting. Because, what can I say? So many sinful activities in this life, what to speak of previous lives. And that carries us, at the time of death, we are carried away out of the gross body. This body, flesh, bones and blood, at death stays behind. And what happens is the subtle body, it exits and it carries with it all the good things and all the bad things. So, in a cloud of sinful reactions, I took birth in a sinful place. With sinful parents who were engaged in sinful activities. What can I say? That was the situation. I'll save you the details, because this is a temple and we like to speak about Krishna. Anyway, the point is that somehow or other we all take birth in some condition of life. Camels take birth in deserts. So in deserts, there is not much to eat. It's all sand. Every once in a while, a little bush. But most of the bushes in the desert have thorns. So it is described that camels, they eat from those bushes. And Prabhupada explains, he said, it's very tasty. It's very tasty to eat from these thorn bushes. Oh yes, you eat the leaves and you get nice taste of blood, fresh blood. Very tasty. Yes? Of course, it's your own blood. That's camel life, basically. That's camel. In Vrindavan, I have seen, near the bus station, people are poor. So, there are no toilets. And the kids, you see them in the morning, and they're all sitting lined up at the gutter, ready to pass stool. And they have a little stick in their hand, because the hogs, big hogs, are waiting. And they like their breakfast hot. What to say? What did they do, these hogs, to become like that? What did they do to take birth in such a way? I don't know. So we don't know. But we know, or I know that I have suffered in this life. And I've seen a lot of suffering. in this life. People that became rich and lost everything, and then killed themselves. What else could they do? Foolish, foolish men. Yeah. To chase after false glitter. Money, false glitter. Yes. Oh yes, some money we need, and some money we'll get. But greed means you want more than you would naturally get. Greed means you become obsessed by money, and you do anything to get it. So many people got caught up in greed. I was on a plane, and we were waiting for the before departure. Whole plane was full, and next to me there was an empty seat. Then this big guy, black like anything. Not really black, you know what I mean? Really black, very black. And with a big golden chain around his neck, you know? Came down the aisle, came walking in my direction. And I thought, he looks like a drug dealer. He looked like it, you know, I've seen many. He looked like it. I thought, maybe he's from Nigeria. He was.
Hare Krishna.
What can I say? He was. He sat next to me, and he had a book with him about Pablo Escobar, that is the big drug lord from Colombia, you know. So he's reading the book. Drug dealer confirmed. Then he pulls a magazine out of his pocket, you know, and he opens up the magazine. And in the middle of the magazine, there is a spread, a page, and it shows how much money different presidents of different countries have stolen. And it shows Suharto from Indonesia as number one. And it shows $59 billion. So the guy, and so I'm looking over his shoulder into the magazine, little interested. $59 billion he stole, right? So then the guy he looks at me and he says, you know, $59 billion. He stole $59 billion. You couldn't spend it if you wanted to. And I looked at him again. He said, $59 billion. $59 billion. You couldn't spend it if you wanted to. And then, you know, after a little while, he said it again. $59 billion. $59 billion. You couldn't spend it if you wanted to. And I tell you, I walked off that plane, and you know what I said? $59 billion. You couldn't spend it if you wanted to. So this is greed. Getting so much, you can't even spend it. You can't even spend it. So much they have. You know, you couldn't spend it if you wanted to. Still they want more. Still they want more. That much money. So, greed. Greed is a big issue. It comes from lifetimes. Not just in this life. It comes from previous lives. Greed is already in little children. Children, mothers, they think that babies are innocent. Oh, my dear, innocent little child. But they're not so innocent. It's in their heart. It's all there. The same greed is there. Oh, yes, it is. I saw a mother on a railway platform while we were waiting for a train. And she bought one big tub of ice cream for two kids. So, you know, you can imagine what happens. One tub of ice cream for two kids. It's like ready for war, you know. And so I watched the whole thing. So I see the kids, you know, fighting over the thing. And the mother is trying to separate them. And, you know, trying to say, no, share it, you know. No, yeah. So afterwards, you know, I sort of asked her, I said, why didn't you buy two ice creams? Why didn't you just buy one? She said, no, they have to learn how to share. So I thought, well, you know, these mothers, huh? There's a whole philosophy behind it, you know? All behind a tub of ice cream, just see. But it is a fact. It is a fact. We have to learn to share. It's a simple thing. But if we share, we have more wealth than that man who stole $59 billion and doesn't know how to spend it. Couldn't spend it if he wanted to. Couldn't spend it if he wanted to. That's a fact. That's a fact. So yes, but how to overcome this greed is not easy. It's rare to find somebody who gives, somebody who's not on the take, somebody who's ready to work for the benefit of others. But this is truly what will actually conquer. This conquers people's hearts. At this point, you know, you cannot get away without saying something about Mandela. Everybody is saying that he was his close friend. Everybody, right? Yeah, I regularly used to go for a cup of tea, you know, the Union Building. What shall we say? Everyone has a story. But why is he so famous? Because he was selfless. He didn't do it for himself. He wasn't in business. Everyone understood. And just see, you know, the government took away 27 years of his life, and Krishna gave it back. Made him 95. Not everybody gets 95. So Krishna just gave it back. So like that. We are more fortunate. We have Krishna. By chanting Hare Krishna once, you can destroy more sins than you can commit in a lifetime. I don't know how many times we've chanted today, but it was a lot. So a lot of lifetimes can go. Now I'm saving my voice for tomorrow, what to do. It's cracking. That's one reason to go to the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, your voice doesn't crack. In the spiritual world, your hands never split from playing mridanga. In the spiritual world, you don't need racing gloves and your drum. In the spiritual world, you never get tired. In the spiritual world, you can dance and there's no end. So yeah, that's this world. Here in this world, we may think some people are enjoying and some people are suffering. That's what we may think. We may think, oh, some people in the world, oh, they are the lucky people, they have everything. And other people in the world, they have to suffer. We may think like that. But I tell you, it's not true. It's not true. Everybody suffers in this world. Because the world is a jail. It's a jail. We are locked in the jail, and our body is the cell. We're locked in this body. We're locked in it. We can't get out. And it is actually the cell. We can't escape it. We may try to enjoy it. Try. You can try. I like the example of the Rolling Stones. I can't get no satisfaction. And I tried and I tried. They're still trying. Mick Jagger must be 80 by now. Or something like that. He's still trying. He never stopped. And they pumped so much drugs in their veins. And then they would go every once in a while on a kidney machine to clean the blood and so that they could do it again. Yeah. All right. But still not enough. Still not enough. Still not satisfied. Not satisfied. You may have one woman, not satisfied. You may have two women, not satisfied. Three, not satisfied. See, the Bhaktisiddhanta, he lived 100 years ago. He said, a man may have all the women in the world, still not satisfied. What can be done? The mind is not satisfied. And that is why we are in jail, you see. Because of our mind. We are in jail. Wherever we are, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. No money in your pocket, in jail, thinking no money. Lots of money in your pocket, still in jail. Still in jail. Still. Still not free. Still not free. It's difficult. It's difficult. So this Hare Krishna movement, this chanting of Hare Krishna, is giving us a chance to get free. But Prabhupada describes a story, and he describes there was a bird which had lived its whole life in a cage. Then one day they took the cage, put it outside in the field, and opened the door. So the bird is looking. Door is open and out he went. The bird was flying around, a little bit in the sky, turned around and flew back in the cage. Who's the bird? Are we the bird? The door is open. We can fly out. But we've been in the cage so long, and says, actually, I like my cage. It's a nice cage. There are many good things. I have different levels where I can sit, and tasty things also in my cage. It's a comfortable cage. Beautiful also. Got a good view from my cage. Yes, I like this cage too much. It's the body. That's the cage. And we keep on trying to enjoy it this way, that way. Oh, it's so good. But why are we not satisfied if it's so good? Say, no, but still it's very good. Yeah, but it brings you suffering. It brings you suffering. Not only are we not satisfied, it brings so many complications. Yeah, it's like... Man wants a woman wants a man, woman wants children, and so many things. God, then you have one, can't go anywhere, the thing cries, and so on, all the time. You know, God, God, can't go anywhere, that kid all the time, you know, the kid, you know, can someone take care of the kid? Your turn, forget it. Forget it. Who's going to change the nappy today? It ain't me, babe. These kind of scenarios you get, you know? No, I'm saying, maybe what I'm painting is... But what does it all lead to? What does it all lead to? And then we have a beautiful house, and then we have so many bills, and then we sit in that beautiful house, and it feels just like a cage. It's still, nothing satisfies all this. So the point is, why waste our time? Do you know Mr. Bean? So Mr. Bean was coming in his little car. And he parked it, walked out, and went into a hotel. And when he came to the hotel, there was a counter, there was no one behind it, but there was some sort of bell you could hit on it. So he was going, ding, 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 ding. Then one man came from behind the counter. Yes. Mr. Bean wanted a room. So, all right, he showed him the room, came to the room. Yes, he took the room. Then he was in the room alone. He had a suitcase. He opened his suitcase. He took a drill, a Black & Decker drill, out of his suitcase. And he starts like, drilling holes in the walls. Then he takes screws, puts screws. And then from his suitcase, he took paintings. And he hangs them on the wall, everywhere, different paintings. Then he was looking for the bathroom door, and he saw that the bathroom was actually a common bath. It was not connected to his room. So he put a saw blade on the drill. And he cut out a door. Made hinges, fixed it, locked the bathroom on the inside. Then took his teddy bear, put his sleeping head on, his pajamas, tucked himself and the teddy bear in, and was ready for the night. Mr. Bean. It's crazy. Treating a temporary situation as if it's permanent. It's crazy. Yeah. But that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. So it says in the Bhagavatam, it says, even sometimes a devotee who's chanting Hare Krishna falls in Maya, in illusion. And he may still be inclined to enjoy the senses. But if he keeps on chanting Hare Krishna and tries to get back, then the Yamadutas, the servants of Yamaraj, cannot touch him. They cannot touch him. It says in Bhagavatam. So like this, devotees are protected. We are protected. We are playing with the material energy. I was on one program in Germany, in the Sunday program, and they had a clown in the temple. Right? And the clown was spinning balls on his fingers, on his toes, and one with a stick on his nose. Five balls spinning at the same time. A real Russian clown. It was good, you know. Russian clowns are good. He was good. And what it had to do with the Sunday feast, I don't know. But anyway, he was good. So after I gave the lecture, and then, you know, I had this idea. In the beginning, you're young, you're at the stream of opportunities. Hey, take three or four, take five, spin them around. Like that. But time moves along. And then, you know, yeah, a little less flexible, you know, a little less speedy, but more clear. There's a good one. Grab it. There's another thing. Then you're not a kid anymore, you know. As a kid, you're playing for the fun. And they get a little older, you get more serious. Grab the good ones. Got it. Another good. Good. Grab it. Good, good, good opportunity. Grab it. Like that. But time moves along. And as time moves along, getting a little older. Anyway. That wasn't so good anyway. Let it go. And at the end, two old people sitting on a bench, looking at the stream of opportunities. And one says to the other one, that was a good one. That's all. Saw a man with a t-shirt. It said, heard it all, seen it all, done it all, but can't remember it all. With time, you know, you lose your teeth, you lose everything at time. Okay. So, you know, so one who's intelligent can see ahead, can see long term. You know, one who is a child can only see now, you know. But one who is more mature can see long term, can see, look, you know, we're going to die, and then what? So, at that time, you got to be strong. So, therefore, this human form of life is a chance. We've got a chance. It's up to us. Prabhupada's movement came to us, wherever we came from. Because of previous sinful activities, we still have sinful desires now. That's all. We may say, oh, I'm struggling with spiritual life. Just means that in previous life, we were sinful. That's why we're struggling. I find it so difficult. I find spiritual life so difficult means you were sinful in your last life. If you were a great devotee in your last life, then now it would be so easy, so natural. See? But when we were sinful in the last life, then in this life, oh, it's so difficult. You see the point? So, all right. We may be struggling. We're from Kali Yuga. We're all sinful. But we understand why we are struggling. So we need purification by chanting, by hearing and chanting, and taking Krishna prasadam. And then somehow take shelter of that, and then somehow or other we'll make it. Because these things are addictive, you see. Chanting is addictive. It's hard to stop. Prasadam, is there more? Devotee association, you know, like, you don't find that anywhere else. So all these things are addictive. So that will save us, even from our sinful desires at the end of the day. So let's hear, let's chant, let's take Krishna prasadam. Somehow or other, one-time chanting destroys more sinful activities than we can commit in a lifetime. Nam nam yavati shakti papanirarane hare tavat kartum shaknoti patakam pataki naraha. Thank you very much. Any questions? Comments? Next Kirtan Mahaprabhu or someone who's fired up has to lead because my voice is cracked. Jeff.
I don't remember. It's just a comment. Your presence today meant so much. Since I gave his third candy. And then, well, apart from that, Maharaj said, I know you also that the Suvit is also dear to your heart. And also our struggle. And then, apart from that, I just want to tell you that you have been a
inspiration. You say big things, you know. I'm doing only small things. Yeah. But. Yeah.
And also, Maharaj, your vision that you want to see African preaching power. And then I just want to know that you're not alone.
Yeah, one reason is that when I was a new devotee, I first was in Vrindavan temple, stayed there for some time. Then I had to go to Amsterdam, where my visa finished. I went back to my own country. So I was in Amsterdam in the temple. But it was tough, because the mood was like a military base, you know? And I'm not a military man. I tell you, I don't fit in the army at all. You know? I can't handle it. Army sergeants and all that. And the mood was a bit like that. So I had a hard time, and they were very busy collecting money, and always they would, everybody would ask you, how much? They never ask you, how are you? They ask you, how much? So I had a hard time in this Amsterdam temple at the time. And then there was one devotee, Afro-American devotee, in the temple. And he was the only human being, you know? He was the only one who would say, how are you? Right? You could have a normal conversation with him, you know? Everyone else was like, yeah? So you could just say, you know, I feel terrible today, or I feel this, or I feel that. And he would consider, and he helped me. And, but at one point, they sent me out to distribute books, and I was on the German border, and I was having a hard time. It was new, and I found it very difficult on the street. So at the time, at one point, I left and took a little vacation, you know, from Krishna consciousness. But then this devotee, named Mahavirya, that was his name, when he heard that I had left, he said, I will not eat until he comes back. And he did. So I let him starve for 3 days. You know. And then I went back to the temple. So in a way, I'm paying him back, yeah, for what he did for me. He made me chant 32 rounds every day at that time, get up very early. He made me every day chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Sanskrit and the verses. He had me on a strict program. And even now, whatever I learned from him is still a source of strength. So I have a debt to pay to Mahavirya. So that's actually one reason why I'm in Africa. I'm paying my debt. Mahavirya, he was in Kenya in the 70s, late 70s, when Prabhupada was still present. And there was a gang that attacked the temple, and they wanted to destroy the deities. So Mahavirya jumped on the altar and was fighting, and finally they got him with a machete, right, and chopped and this and that. So he almost died at that time, but he survived it. So he is not an ordinary devotee. Now he's somewhere in New York. You know, I haven't seen him for a long time. But sometimes he comes to Ratiyatra. So next time I'll see him, I'll tell him about Sawita.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you were explaining how that verse says how when you chant Hare Krishna, I can't chant this book.
What? Nam nam yavati shakti papani harade hare tavat kartum ashaknuti patakam pataki naraha. Anyone can, even a taxi driver can chant. You drive taxi, huh?
Yes, Maharaj. I just wanted to know, does that also apply to Vaishnava Parad? Like if you commit Vaishnava Parad, does that also eradicate that sin?
Well, if you commit Vaishnava Aparad, then you don't lose your pious credits from your devotional service. It still stays in your spiritual bank account. But what happens is your bank account gets frozen. Just like you have a bank account, the government freezes your bank account, can't get the money. So when you commit Vaishnava Aparad, your bank account of spiritual credit gets frozen. And then after you have to suffer for some time, just like. And then when you get purified by that suffering, then again, you can get access to your spiritual bank account. So if you commit Vaishnava Aparad, you suffer the reaction for some time, and then you carry on with all the benefit from your chanting. So nothing can destroy the effect of the chanting. Not even Vaishnava Aparad. But it can freeze your bank account. Yeah.
As you were saying about the Vaishnava Parad, I would like to understand that, you know, you say you're living in the temple. Like Krishna always finds a way to show you where your weakness, mm-hmm. your weak point is. Like maybe by getting someone who knows how to press your buttons.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that vice operand? Is that vice operand? If someone presses my buttons and I say, oh, God, you. Anyway, and I call them some names, you know, which I will not say now.
But what I would like to understand is, how do you, like, we are all conditioned.
Mm.
We are all conditioned.
Yes.
And in a way that some of us, I'll talk for myself, I'm so conditioned that sometimes it's hard to, like, control the motives.
Yeah.
The emotions of
yeah.
after that.
Yeah.
So you get to a place where you think you've escaped, just, at least not escape, but a break.
Yeah.
And you get to a place where it's even more.
Yeah. And you brought it with you. and it gets like a pleasure cooker.
Yeah.
Temple life is a little bit like a pleasure cooker, because in the world, you know, you have some outlets, you know what I mean? There's all this sort of lust, frustration, etc. And you just get drunk one night and, you know, the next day, okay, you got rid of the frustration for a night. But as a devotee, all that you can do is eat lots of prasadam, you know, and take shelter in that. Or, I mean, you can't drink anything, smoke anything, or do anything like that, right? Sex, then you have to get married and all that. There's no sex for recreation, you know, right? Just for the sport.
Yeah.
So in that way, it is sometimes a little, we get in a pressure situation in the temple, actually. But all right, you just tolerate that. And in the pressure situation, you brought your false ego and someone else brought his. And these two false egos are like really clashing nicely. And you know, before I joined the temple, I thought it's going to be really nice because I'm going to be with like-minded people at last. You know, my whole life I've been around people and always felt a stranger. I used to sing songs, I'm nothing but a stranger, you know, always around. But everywhere I was, I feel I don't belong here. There's but now I move in the temple and I find people who are like-minded, and finally, you know, I'll be with like-minded people. Then I move into the temple. And then I saw that that horrible guy had also joined the temple. Yeah, some guy I really couldn't stand. He had also become a devotee. Like, how is it possible? How is it possible, him, that of all people, he became a devotee? I can't believe it. And in this way, I found that in the community of devotees, some people I could get on with and some I almost had a natural instinct, you know, sort of like, this guy, I don't want to deal with him, I don't want to see him. So yes, it's very difficult. So in the Lord Chaitanya understands. He understands where we come from. He knows that we're not pure. He knows we're full of false ego. So he knows that in the beginning, sometimes it gets out of hand. And I've seen all kinds of cases. Huh? I've seen the skinny Mataji strangle the fat one.
Wow.
Yeah, I was impressed. But it wasn't with me. It's a friend, you know. Do not touch that. Little. What to do? People who are a little more fat are usually happy people. Skinny people are sour people. Is that you? No, but back to the real thing. So it's Lord Chaitanya understands that we, in the beginning, are going to be a little rough on the edges, and that there may be some sparks flying, and he doesn't take it very serious. But when you get envious, when you get really envious, I'm going to destroy this guy. That's Vaishnava Aparad. That's when it really gets Vaishnava Aparad. And if you just go after someone, yeah, if you stop being a Vaishnava, stop trying to, you know, Trinadapi Suni Chena, more tolerant than a tree, Mahamud than a blade of grass. If you stop trying that, and you just go after someone, I'm going to, you know, get this guy, screw this guy. You know, that's envy. And then you get strong reactions. That's where it begins. But the little rough dealings between new devotees are not so serious. Not taken so serious. Maybe if you keep on doing it, maybe it will destroy some taste. But it will not completely destroy our spiritual life. Otherwise, what chance would we have? Because everybody comes from a different background than pure devotee. And you can't overnight act like a pure devotee. For a while, until, you know, it gets too much. Well, we should try. It's about trying. And if sometimes we fail, that's okay. But we should keep on trying to be more tolerant than a tree, to be respectful. Mahavirya used to cook for me because I had a liver problem. I had had hepatitis in India. So, you know, you turn yellow and all that. So I couldn't eat all the greasy stuff that the devotees were eating. So he cooked for me. And he would make this bread and always write a note, your dog servant. He would call himself my dog servant. I think this is too much, you know. How can any human being, right, call himself someone else's dog servant, you know? This is not decent anymore. This is goes beyond human decency. Like, this is too much, you know. Why are you calling yourself my dog servant, you know? I'm your dog servant, you know? And he would always be in a competition to offer obeisances first to any devotee. So if you saw any devotee, boom, go down. Immediately. Immediately offer obeisances. Immediately. So it was hard to beat him because he was fast, you know. If you wanted to offer him obeisances first, boy, you had to be fast. So I was trying, but usually he would defeat me. He was fast. So that helps, you know. That sort of attitude of helps. Although we are not so humble, but we're offering obeisances to other Vaishnavas. And by doing that, we develop some humility. And when you become humble, you can tolerate anything. And then we can conquer anger, you see. Anger also is related to pride, you know what I mean?
Who are you to talk to me?
Pride, you know. You know what the guy said to me? You know, so pride is our enemy. So by bowing down to devotees, we can conquer pride gradually. Not in one night, not in one day, but gradually. So these things you have to try if you want to get out of the cage. I think we should stop, Mahaprabhu. It's up to me. I think I'm getting tired. I'm too tired for the next kirtan. My voice is finished. So if you could take the roof off or do whatever, take us into one of these Mahaprabhu kirtans. I'm a big fan of Mahaprabhu's kirtans. Because when he does kirtan, you know, remember when Rati Yatra, he does a kirtan, then he doesn't look at the crowd, you know. He starts singing and he looks up, you know. He just looks somewhere there. And I think he's looking at Krishna, you know, or something. He's not looking at, like, anybody. He's just there, you know. So, I'm a fan of Mahaprabhu's kirtan. So if you would sing, I would be very happy. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.